I remember the day that he was at the hospital, I got a call after work, and then I walked into the emergency room, and it's just looking at my mum and dad's face, I knew something was wrong, but I didn't expect it was going to be, you know, cancer.
This is Karen.
They couldn't tell me what was happening at that point. And then dad just sat me down. He said they did tests, they did scans and everything, and they're suspecting it's cancer. And it just, I didn't have anything to say to that. So after some time, you know, when they properly diagnosed him and said it was stage 4, then it just hit us, like, because nothing in the family ever happened like this before. And for it to happen to dad, it was just out of nowhere. It just hit us.
I'm Dr. Ranjana Srivastava, and in my role as an oncologist, I was privileged to care for Karen's father, Paul. This is a story that affected me deeply, because Paul's family and all those who cared about him, including me, were exposed to the unfairness of cancer.
He wasn't like a normal cancer patient. Like, we haven't obviously experienced anything with cancer, but he wasn't a normal cancer patient for us to say, oh, he was internally sick. Outwards, he was always, you know, was bubbly, always had a good outlook on life as well. And it still hasn't hit that he died from cancer, but we just have to accept it. And I know that what he did for when he was alive, it's all, what he did was right.
This is a series about the ripple effects of cancer, and I want to trace Paul's path and how it's impacted on his daughters, Karen and Rebecca, and on his wife, Loretta. Also, what it's like for people like me who work professionally with cancer patients and their families. Paul first came to us with severe back pain that was attributed to kidney stones, which seemed like a reasonable diagnosis in an otherwise well and relatively young man. However, within the next several hours, it became clear that there was much more to Paul's pain. Scans showed he had widespread lung cancer. And that's another reason why I talk about cancer's unfairness, because Paul had never smoked. His situation required urgent treatment. This is his other daughter, Rebecca.
I remember, because the first time I was doing really good, Dad would have like a few bad nights, like where he wasn't feeling well or his mood was down. But apart from that, he was doing really well. So after the first tablet stopped working, it was kind of scary because we were all just so secure, knowing, okay, the tablet's doing well. It's only like up from here. So when you kind of find out that it's not working anymore, you're kind of back to square one. It was kind of like it took us back to the first day Dad was diagnosed again. Kind of like 2 steps forward, 10 steps back.
It's incredibly tough. For most of the time of his treatment, which lasted just short of a year, Paul was doing all right. He had some pain issues and some ups and downs, but he kept up his spirits and his stamina and continued to work. But then, within a matter of weeks, Paul's health took a sharp downturn. The drug stopped working, he became tired and unwell, until he could no longer remain at home and was admitted to hospice, Melbourne's McCulloch House. And while I had expected this event at some stage, its sheer speed took me completely by surprise. This is Paul's wife, Loretta.
The last few weeks was really terrible because we just went in to do a biopsy. But when we went there, we got some other news other than the biopsy. And when the doctor told us, just do the little things that make you happy, we got the picture. And even at that point of time, Paul did not give up. He said, no, we will fight it out through this. And yeah, I said, yes, love, we will. You came out through the first one, you came out through the second one, and that he was in safe hands, and the doctors would do the best for his own health, whatever clinical decision they took. Paul always told them, doctor, whatever decision you make, I know it is for my good health and it's for my best.
No, you're fine. Shortly before Paul died, he was transferred to hospice.
What was the day of transfer like?
When the doctor told us, do the little things that make you happy. I didn't expect it would have been after 2 or 3 days. I was expecting it for a month. And even at that point of time, I remember asking the doctor, even if we go to McCullough House and if things turned out to be good, can we go home and then continue the treatment? And I remember the doctor's words saying, yes, we all believe for miracles. If things turn around, we could continue the treatment. We went to McCullough House, not knowing that would be the last for Paul. And yes, every minute, every hour, we were hoping for things to turn around. But it did not turn around. I think it stopped on 2nd February 2018.
What struck me, though, was his kindness. Even in his last days in hospice, I remember him as being so kind towards his visitors, towards other people. He was still concerned about whether someone had a seat, whether somebody had had a meal. I know he said to you, Loretta, to look after yourself and go out and get some fresh air. And I remember being so moved by thinking that here is a man in the final stages of his life, and he still has such enormous heart for other people. Was he always like that?
Oh, he was always like that. He was always. You cannot take Paul out of that picture. He was a man with a kind heart. He will go all out to help people just to bring a smile on their face. I remember even in McCullough House when the nurses used to come and change Paul, he would say, God bless y'all for y'all are doing such a wonderful job. And I even remember the nurses saying, oh, Paul, you're such a kind man. No one ever blessed us and no one ever prayed for us. But you are praying for us, sir. I remember that nurse telling that. And she said, ma'am, you're such a lucky person to have Sir Paul in your life. There's such a wonderful man, they said. I said, yes, he's always like that. And he's always wants to help people. It's unexplainable, his way of helping people.
What a wonderful tribute to the both of you. That's lovely. You know, when I attended his funeral, I was very struck by the fact that it was a full room of people on a weekday afternoon. And when I listened to the eulogies and listened to all the messages, I couldn't help thinking that Paul had packed in a lot in a short life.
Yeah, a lot of people say that they find inspiration from Dad, because even though he was diagnosed, he never gave up. He kept working no matter what anyone said. Like, even every time he talked about the cancer, he says, I'm not worrying. I have hope. He's fine. He was very calm about it. So yeah, I think he inspired a lot of people. So that's comforting.
I want to turn now to your lives now. Paul died in February. What's your life like at the moment?
I don't think it's different. It's just quiet now. You know, even though he's not physically here, spiritually I know I can still hear him. I can still, you know, I can talk to him whenever I need to talk to him, but I just won't get a proper response, that's all. It's just anything that I do around the house or mum or my sister does, it just reminds us of him. You know, he loved this house. This is probably his dream house that he always wanted. And, you know, to even be in this house, it just feels comforting to be. It's like being with him again.
Yeah, you can't describe what it's like, because even it's so hectic when Dad was diagnosed and then when Dad was in McCulloch House. And even after Dad passed, it was still quite hectic with funerals and people coming, people going. And once all of that dies down, it's kind of just silence in a way. It's just very quiet. It's peaceful, like knowing that obviously he's not in pain anymore. He's not suffering. Yeah, that's a comforting part of it. But it's weird. Not weird. It's hard to come to terms sometimes. Like sometimes it still feels like Dad's just in the hospital, and we'll go in the evening to see him, and then you just remember that he's not really around, and it's hard to come to terms with like that it's permanent now. Like your whole life, you think you grow up with both your parents, and your parents will see you graduate, and your parents will see you do this and that, and obviously Dad will see that. Things happen, but it's hard kind of accepting that what you've thought your whole life would be like is suddenly not going to be like that anymore. So yeah, it's hard to come to terms with that sometimes. Yeah.
So Loretta, what is it like being the only parent that is now physically present in the girls' lives?
It's really tough because I have to do the part as a father and a mother. I have to make decisions like how we both would have made a decision and what would be the best solution. But I've learned a lot from Paul because he was a person who was always organized. He advised me even prior to his death, if should anything happen, that I should do this and I should do that and what I should do and what I shouldn't do. Now when I look back, it actually helps me for whatever he advised me. But apparently, running the show as a single parent, I have no experience on this, but I believe I have to move forward, knowing that Paul is with me in my spirit and teaching me how to do things.
And it must help to have two very strong, wonderful girls.
Oh yeah, they are my moral support. I see Paul in them because they value family, and we all value each other's family. As a family, we are united, and my girls are really strong. The father really taught them well to be bold and to be courageous.
I think you did too.
I'm learning.
And Rebecca, you turned 18 just before Paul died, is that right?
Yep, so I turned 18 9 days before Dad passed away. Mom always said she always thought Dad kind of held on a little bit longer just for my birthday. I used to bug him about like turning 18, getting a car, getting a license, all that good stuff. So I think Dad made sure he finished that off before he went as well, got the car, made sure I had the birthday, all that stuff before he went in.
So he was at the party?
Yes, he was. Even though he was very tired, he must have been, wasn't really in the best party mood. But yeah, he held on. He kept a smile on his face at me, yeah.
And did he pick your car?
Yep, he did. He made sure I got what I wanted, my dream car. Yeah, he always gave us the best, yeah.
That's wonderful. Karen, what do you think your challenge is going to be this year?
Just overcoming the fact that I just want to make my dad proud for what I do in my future career as a nurse as well. So doing that through my studies, you know, and continuing on, you know, he'd always say push through as much as you can. You know, I'll do that for him, but just the main challenge I would face was probably just accepting what life is in a few years or a few months or even weeks without him. Just to continue on and, you know, make him proud, that's all.
Mm.
Yeah.
Loretta, you're obviously very busy. You are still grieving. You have a lot of things to do. You work, you have paperwork at home. Tell me why you agreed to talk to us.
I think it's Paul's desire to help out people, to know what he went through, and to share his experience that whatever situation he was in, he never gave up. He was a fighter and he was a strong believer. And I think through this media, people will learn from our experience what we went through, what we are going through, and what we will overcome, so that people will gain strength and understanding from this.
Thank you so much, Loretta. And also to Loretta and Paul's two daughters, Karen and Rebecca. If the ripple effects of cancer have touched you, there's support. Your state's Cancer Council can direct you to the help you need. I'm Ranjana Srivastava.